Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great.
You sound perplexed.
I know. Changing it up. Keeping you on your toes.
Oh, okay.
I can't just stick with the same tone all the time.
Oh, yeah, that'd be crazy.
Oh, my gosh. But I'm in a pretty good mood.
Good. You know, that's just positive.
Do you want to guess what I did?
I can only imagine it's golf.
Yep.
In fact, I know it is.
I know. It's just, there's no better feeling when you hit ball good.
I love when you hit ball good. Alex is training for some golf tournament that he's doing with his friends. So it's really pedal to the metal right now. He's really golfing it up.
Yeah, you got to. It's stupid fun, you know?
Yeah, I love that.
Just a bunch of guys getting drunk and trying to play golf.
You're just going
to
ball with your bros. I get it.
Yeah, you know how it is.
And
so,
my ball with my bros is me going thrifting and then going to Taco Bell.
Tell them about the Cheez-It.
Oh, I just found out that there's a Crunchwrap right now with a Cheez-It. I don't know if that's still going to be a thing by the time this episode comes out, but the Crunch is a Cheez-It right now. That's huge for me.
Big.
Big for me. So anyway, that's what I'm going to be doing on Saturday when he's golfing with all of his bros.
And I respect that.
Thank you.
But we have quite the stories for people.
We sure do.
I've been told. I don't know what they are, but...
Underwater nightmares.
Yep.
Yeah, this is one of my personal nightmares because, you know, I was thinking about what to do this week for the story and, you know, it's the beginning of summer, people are going to be going to the beach, and so I thought I could just do us all a favor and...
Ruin it.
And ruin it. Give us all a little reminder that we are not alone out there and things could go horribly wrong. I'm sorry, that's terrible.
What a great summer message.
No, I'm support so that. Joking. But no, I mean, truly, when I go to the beach, this is what I think about. So this is just a look into my brain, really.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think about sharks and orcas and sometimes giant squid if I really am getting freaky with it, you know?
Yeah. And you just don't like...
natural bodies of water?
Well, that, but like squishy things on your feet.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, no. I mean, the whole... I have this motto that when I'm on a walk or a hike, the nature cannot touch me. I can touch the nature, but if it's touching me, it's too close. I don't like it. And that kind of applies for the water as well. If there's seaweed or fish or things touching me, muck, I'm unhappy. So I exist peacefully only in a pool or a hot tub. And that's just who I am. And I'm not going to apologize for it.
No. And you shouldn't.
Yeah.
But do tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so I have a couple of stories for us today. Four, to be exact, I believe. We're going to be talking about sharks and orcas and giant squid. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, aren't orcas...
killer whales?
No, like super scary because they're
terrifying,
intelligent.
Terrifying beings. Yeah. Oh my God.
And they just don't care. Like, they're intelligent,
but they're
like...
really smart.
Sociopaths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just like to kill for fun. Although, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I've heard a lot about orcas recently. That's like, they're really smart and they're starting to kill for fun, like people, and they'll tip over boats and they'll eat you. And like, I don't know, this could just be someone on TikTok being like, spooky. And I'm like,
yeah,
ah.
I feel like this is the type of rabbit hole you would fall down on TikTok.
What can I say? I am who I am.
This is definitely what you're susceptible to looking at.
Yes, definitely. But when I was doing research about these like orca stories, it said there hasn't been any like deadly orca attacks in the wild. Like most of the attacking is happening when they're in captivity, which is true. I mean, I guess it's just like people aren't really interacting with orcas out in the wild very often. So like if you are getting hurt by an orca, it's most likely because it's a trainer in like SeaWorld.
Yeah.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Why don't we jump into the first story? Because that one's not for a little bit.
Yeah. No, I guess the moral of the story is be nice to the orcas.
Well,
I don't know.
Maybe just
stay away.
Put them in a tank.
Nice wide berth.
Yeah. Give them a nice wide ocean. How about that? Just don't put them in a little tank and then expect them to not kill you because they'll kill you. Anyway, why don't we start with story number one? Which is about bull sharks. Are you familiar with the Variety?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Terrifying. Okay. Our story takes place on July 9th, 2000, in the Gulf Shores of Alabama. It was the Gulf of Mexico, and it's famous for their warm water and sandy beaches, and it's also one of the most active areas in the world for shark attacks. If you've ever been in that water, you've most likely been a lot closer than you would like to a shark. You might never know that they are there, but they know you are. Isn't that fun?
Wow. That's such a comforting thought.
I know.
Tell me more.
Bull sharks are one of the most dangerous and aggressive sharks. They're very persistent, so once they attack, they are finishing what they started. They're commonly found worldwide in warm, shallow waters along the coasts and, get this one, in rivers, okay? Bull sharks can thrive in both salt and fresh water. Isn't that just messed up?
I'm just like, tell me more. Where can they swim up now?
Like literally rivers. The fact that they can be in salt and natural, not natural, fresh water is homophobic. It's June, right? It's Pride Month. That's messed up.
Wow. Yeah, I guess it is barely June.
Well, when this comes out, it'll be June. So.
Oh, word. Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that's just... I mean, because when you're in fresh water, you're like, okay, I'm safe.
Yeah, there right, couldn't no possibly sharks. Be sharks in this river. Wrong. Bull sharks, the worst ones, could be in there.
Yeah, it's a bunch of bull shark, if you ask me.
That's, okay, very good. They are known to travel far up rivers and have been known to travel up the Mississippi River and as far as Alton, Illinois. I don't know where that is, but hey, Alton, Illinois, you got bull sharks, apparently.
They went up to Illinois? That's... thousands of miles?
Yes.
It's like 2,000 miles.
1,100 kilometers or 700 miles from the ocean. Oh, okay. So, yeah.
Almost 1,000 miles?
Yes. But few freshwater interactions with humans have been recorded. Larger sized bull sharks are probably responsible for the majority of near shore shark attacks, including many incidents of shark bites attributed to other species. The name bull shark comes from the shark's stocky shape, broad, flat snout, and aggressive, unpredictable behavior.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Initial Quality Study Award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
Since bull sharks often dwell in very shallow waters and are very territorial by nature, they may be the most dangerous to humans than any other species of shark. Bull sharks are one of the three shark species, along with tiger and great white, that are most likely to bite humans. So by the early morning that day, a bull shark was on the hunt, and it stayed close to the shoreline because it knew sooner or later something would swim by that it could eat. Chuck Anderson, a former football coach and father of two, was training for a triathlon. And that day his plan was to train in the ocean. He was accompanied that day by his friend Richard Watley and four-time Hawaiian Ironman champion Karen Forfer. Chuck was really excited to be swimming with Karen that day. She was such an amazing athlete, but his ego had kicked in a little bit and he wanted to keep up with this 64-year-old woman. So the swimmers, of course, knew there was always a chance of running into a shark, but they were choosing to risk it. Chuck was always a little bit leery while swimming in the ocean. No matter how much he tried to put his thoughts elsewhere, sharks always crept back in. And that day in particular, he was more nervous than other days about sharks.
Wow, it's like the vibes were off.
Yeah, something in his lizard brain was like, danger, shark. Humans are not a natural part of the sea. And when you're in the water swimming, right? When you're in the water and swimming around, you're very provocative to a shark. You're splashing around, you're making a lot of noise. And a lot of the times, at least in Chuck's case, they were wearing wetsuits, which makes you look like a seal. That's why surfers are often attacked by sharks, because they're wearing wetsuits and they look like seals. Chuck's friend Richard was swimming out in the deeper water, while Karen and Chuck stuck together a little closer to the shoreline. And after 5 minutes, Chuck was finally in his groove and was focused on swimming faster than Karen, because in his brain, he's just like, I gotta really show up and show out for this swim.
How old is he?
He was, I don't know, maybe in his 40s or 50s.
Wait, no, but she's 64.
That's what he said, yeah.
And she does ultra marathons?
She was like a multi-triathlon winner or something. She'd won multiple.
Oh, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
She was no joke.
I imagine running a triathlon, period.
No,
let
yeah.
Let alone at 64.
And winning.
And winning? She's yeah, winning yes. at 64.
Yeah, she had won multiple.
Well, I didn't know if it was earlier in her life.
Well, I don't know if she won them at 64. She won multiple, so I assume it was, you know, over time.
That's insane. Yeah, I'm going to collect my Social Security check and then go run a triathlon.
Hey, you know.
Do a triathlon.
Whatever. That's metal. But so anyway, Chuck was really trying to outswim Karen, even though that was simply never going to happen. And part of their swim was they would be swimming past this old pier that had been blown down and into the water during Hurricane Frederick back in the late 70s. But that pier under the water acted almost as an artificial reef. Invertebrates grow on the pilings, and then fish come to eat those invertebrates, and then bigger fish come to eat those fish, and then sharks come to eat the big fish. So it was a natural area where sharks would go to find food. And unknowingly, they had entered this reef area and were in this shark's playground. Karen had sped up ahead of Chuck, of course, and he said he was being chivalrous and letting her go through the pilings first, but really she was just kicking his ass and swimming really fast. So Chuck was a bit behind her, and when he looked at his watch, he saw that it was 6:38 a.m. And just after he did that, he took two more strokes before he felt this massive bump. He said it was like a linebacker getting run over by a fullback, for all you football fans out there. He was hit so hard that he was knocked up and out of the water for a second.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he fell back in the water.
Like a chew toy.
Yes, yeah, it was like a train hit him. When he resurfaced, he knew exactly what had hit him, even though he hadn't seen it. That shark was getting a feel for the size and power of its potential prey. As he frantically looked around the water, Chuck's big fear was that there was more than one shark, and that he was about to get attacked by multiple sharks. He screamed out to Karen, who at this point was quite far from him, and yelled that there was a shark and she needed to get to the beach. And so Karen immediately raced to the shore. But Chuck was too far out, and now he was on his own. He knew there was no chance he would outswim anything that was out there with him. And for a moment, he was just treading water, scanning the surface to try to spot the shark, but he couldn't see it. Chuck had been on dives before, and he knew that if he was deep under the water, he would be able to see everything around him. But since he was at the surface, he had no idea what he was dealing with. What he didn't know was that the shark was just below him and was about to come up from the bottom and strike. Isn't that terrifying?
This is the worst nightmare.
Yes, this is what you think when you think a shark is going to come and eat me.
I know, and you're like looking down, you're like, this little silver thing, and then it just hits you like a train.
Yeah, comes swimming at you like tens of
miles per hour.
No, literally. It doesn't sound very scary, but like in reality, it'd be terrifying.
To move through water that fast.
At like 30 miles an hour.
Yeah. Is that how fast they move?
Just about, I think.
That's really, that's a car on a residential road.
Right.
Through the water.
And like only a few feet away from you. So that thing is on you immediately.
Yeah.
So Chuck put his face in the water, and when he did, he saw from the bottom there was a bull shark coming directly at him. He immediately pulled his head out of the water and began to panic because he knew this shark could finish him off with just one bite. Instinctively, Chuck threw his hands out to try to protect his body and to hopefully push the shark away from him. But in doing that, his hand went right into the shark's mouth and it immediately took four fingers off of his right hand. Immediately. Bull sharks have one of the most powerful bites, and their heads are extremely big, and they have huge jaw muscles. And it was likely angry at this point because it just kind of missed what it was going for. It only got a couple of his fingers when I'm sure it wanted his whole arm. Chuck was flailing now and bleeding into the water as the shark turned around, determined to get a bigger bite. Chuck knew the shark wasn't going to just swim off. It had gotten blood, and it was going to come back. And he felt like he was toast. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be fighting a shark in the middle of the ocean. Also, keep in mind, he's treading water. Like, he's not on a sandbar.
Yeah, I mean, in the open ocean is just another...
It's a losing battle.
Yeah.
You're not going to win. But he was still going to do whatever he could to protect himself. One of his biggest fears was that the shark would attack him from behind, and then there would be nothing he could do to protect himself. And the thing about bull sharks is they will hit their prey over and over again. They'll even single them out. So if a bull shark starts attacking you, even if you're with a bunch of other people, like in shallow water, bull sharks have been known to swim around the other people to keep attacking the same person over and over. So once they have their target and you're toast, unless you get out of the water.
It's like a Terminator in the water.
Yeah. Chuck barely had any time to react. He saw the fin slicing through the water at him, like truly a scary movie. And he felt like things were moving in slow motion and he was just in a fog. His kids came to mind because he couldn't imagine his life ending without being able to tell them that he loved them. So he thought to himself, if he was going to survive, he had to get mad. The shark opened its jaws once again, and this time latched onto Chuck's arm and immediately took him 12 to 15 feet under the water. It started thrashing him around like a rag doll, and it was in a feeding frenzy. It was trying to pull Chuck's arm off. Bull sharks are one of the only species that truly gets into a feeding frenzy. Once they start, they do not stop. And Chuck was on the verge of drowning, but for some reason the shark dragged him at a really high speed toward the beach. Just as he thought he couldn't hold his breath any longer, he felt his feet hit the sand, and he was able to bring his head above the water and take a gasping breath. In its determination to eat Chuck, it had dragged him to a sandbar, and Chuck's arm was still in its mouth, but now he had some kind of foothold on the sand, so he used his other hand to hold this bull shark's head away from his face, hoping to not have it snap at his face, and he hit the shark and kicked it to do anything he could to get away from it, but nothing was working. He remembered someone had told him to poke its eye, but he was being held in front of this shark, and its eyes were on the side of its head, so Chuck couldn't even see them, let alone reach them. And his instinct was to just keep hitting and kicking the shark, but again, it wasn't really doing much. He shook his arm that was in the shark's mouth as hard as he could to get away from it, but when he did, his arm came clean off.
Oh my God.
He got himself free, and the shark swam away for a moment. And at that point, he was kind of like fully on the beach, so his two friends were able to pull him out of the water and onto the sand. But for whatever reason, they couldn't get a helicopter to pick him up and bring him to the hospital, and one paramedic that had made it to the beach told them that if they didn't get him to a hospital in the next few minutes, he was going to die. And Chuck thought to himself, whoa, hang on, I thought I was fine. Dying is not an option. Then the guy said, you're blue. If we can't get you to stop bleeding, you're going to die, like, in a few minutes. And that was the first time since getting out of the water that Chuck truly thought he might die. He thankfully was rushed to the hospital, and what remained of his arm was amputated at the elbow.
He only lost his forearm?
Yeah, so I guess it wasn't the whole arm, it was just his forearm, and then they cut it up to his elbow.
Oh, I mean, still gnarly, but I thought, like, shoulder down, the shark got him.
No, forearm. And it took him until halfway to the hospital before he realized that he simply did not have a right arm anymore, and he was never getting it back.
Oh, he didn't even know in the moment?
Like, I guess he knew what happened, but, like, it took him until halfway through the drive for him to realize that, like, it wasn't coming back. Like, it's gone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Despite the trauma, Chuck was determined to not let the attack ruin his life. So 10 months after the attack, he competed in an able-bodied triathlon, and he won.
He won?
Mm-hmm. He was really proud of himself for showing his kids, if you work hard enough, you can do whatever you want. And he even crossed the finish line with his two kids.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Isn't that sick?
Oh, I love the ending of this story.
I know.
It doesn't get better.
Yeah.
Wow, what triumph. I mean, how do you swim with half an arm?
Well, he did.
He did it.
Yeah.
Figure it out, dude.
Seriously.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So that's Chuck's story. Isn't that fun?
Not fun.
Well, maybe you not
know,
that word.
You know what I mean? What word do you use? You
horrifying?
Know, inspiring?
Well, inspiring for sure. But I think bull sharks are probably the most terrifying. I mean, great whites are terrifying too, but bull sharks feel like they're really out to get you.
I've heard
that
great whites, like, they don't want to eat people usually.
I don't know.
You know, like, if they get a bite of you, they might just swim away.
I doubt it.
Like, I feel that that's the great white survivor story that I hear is like, and you know, you used to watch Shark Week. That's what they would say. It's like, oh, it's humans are not its food.
Yeah, no, I get that. But you know, bull this sharks, one,
different story.
No, they, because that's what they said. We're like, bull sharks truly go into a feeding frenzy. Like, not every single species of shark will, you know, that like eat people or like have attacked people. They won't all go into like a crazy feeding frenzy, but bull sharks will. What's so terrifying about great whites is that they get massive. Like they're like the size of a school bus sometimes.
I don't even want to think about it. I'm right? thinking about like Megalodon now.
Oh God. God forbid.
Move on.
Yeah. All right. Well, on to killer whales, I guess.
Sweet.
Like, yeah, right. Sweet. This episode is so terrifying.
They're cute though. They're like little plushies. You Are know? They? Can I imagine it as
Sure. That? We can imagine like a little plushy whale. That's cute. So in April of 1971, 22-year-old Ann Godsey was a secretary for SeaWorld and was asked to ride 5-year-old Shamu in a bikini for a publicity stunt. They wanted
Are
to...
Are you kidding me?
I am so not.
She is the secretary?
Yep.
So they're just trying to show off the secretary?
Yes. They said, hey, That's cute so... girl, can you oh, put on God. A bikini and ride this whale? And she said...
Yeah, there's no danger.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. They wanted... What year is this?
1971.
Yeah, well...
Right? Yeah. It sounds very 71.
Yeah, you know.
They wanted to promote the arrival of SeaWorld's first orca. So I guess Shamu was their first orca, and that was, you know, what they were doing to promote it. Kind of ridiculous, but anyway.
Like tits up for Shamu.
No, literally. Ass out for Shamu, like quite literally. So the stunt, of course, went terribly wrong. When Anne initially got on Shamu, she rode around this, you know, small pool because they were in a really small, like circular pool. And she was on the whale's back and they went around the circle twice before she actually got off of Shamu and back on the side with like the trainers. But then she was asked to get back on Shamu and do it again. So that's when things went wrong. Shamu made it only halfway around this small loop before Anne was thrown off of Shamu's back and was sent into the water, and the whale had turned around and took Anne in its mouth. Anne was basically sitting between the jaws of Shamu with the top half of her body holding on to Shamu's head, just hoping that she wouldn't dive down with Anne in her mouth. She said, I was basically sitting on her bottom jaw with the teeth on my thighs, and I was hanging onto the top of her head.
Was it biting down?
Like, yeah.
Oh my God.
Shamu began to fling Anne around like a rag doll in the pool and wouldn't let her go, continually pulling her under the water and then bringing her back up. And this is a really small pool, so she's just getting flung around, going under and up and under and up, and a trainer jumped into the water to try to get Shamu to release Anne, while other trainers surrounding the pool tried to get Anne to grab onto a metal pole to pull her out. As divers desperately fought to free her using these metal poles, they became worried that if they pulled any harder, Anne's flesh would be ripped off in Shamu's strong teeth. But for a good minute or so, it didn't matter if Anne grabbed the pole or not. She was dragged back under before coming back up. And there, you know, the force of this whale was going to supersede any bit of Anne holding onto this pole, you know? So
yeah, I know. I'm imagining the trainer just yelling at the orca.
Pretty much.
Stop!
Yeah, please.
Like, what are you going to do? I mean, unless you, what, shoot it or spear it? Like, you kind of have to kill it.
Well, they weren't going to do that. So she
I mean, it's going to make big bucks, okay?
Well, literally. So she was desperately trying to stay afloat as Shamu thrashed her around in the water, relentlessly keeping a grip on her leg. Anne said, I was so afraid I was going to drown. She would dive down, and I didn't know how long she would be down there. Eventually, Anne did manage to grab a hold of this pole that was being extended to her and frantically dragged herself toward the edge of the pool, or I guess... Shamu allowed her to go to the edge of the pool. But Shamu grabbed her calf while she was standing on the edge of the pool. So she had like started to get out and was standing basically on the land, but Shamu like bit down on her calf, and it was basically a tug of war between the trainers holding onto Anne's arms and like Shamu holding onto her calf.
Well, I'm gonna guess that Shamu won.
Well, he wasn't really pulling, or she wasn't really pulling, but she was just kind of like bit down on her calf.
This is so interesting.
Very strange.
So it seems like a play bite almost. for I don't an orca know
if it was a play, but
she didn't, she just bit down, she didn't drag her back.
Yeah,
because
I
imagine
know.
That's a pretty easy tug of war for Shamu to win.
Oh, absolutely. If she wanted to pull her back in, she absolutely could have.
That's my point.
I don't know the intentions behind not pulling, but again, orcas are incredibly smart. So maybe she was just mad. Like, she wasn't necessarily trying to kill Anne at that point, but she was really angry.
Yeah, I guess fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's like, only 2,000 cubic feet?
No, seriously. Like, they were, it was a really small pool. So eventually, a trainer pushed down on the whale's tongue with another pole, and Shamu eventually let go of Anne's leg, and Anne was pulled to safety. Anne said there was a lot of blood, but thankfully she wasn't in pain. The water had been so cold, and she was just simply in shock for quite a long time. But she did end up needing around 200 stitches to close up countless cuts and puncture wounds that she sustained while trapped in Shamu's jaws. So after the accident, Anne learned that Shamu had never been ridden, one, by a woman, and had never been ridden without a wetsuit. So,
well, we didn't think about that one.
Exactly. So she was incredibly angry about that and hoped that her traumatic experience would serve as some kind of warning for SeaWorld. Although it really didn't do much because so many incidents happened after that. Shamu died just 4 months after attacking Anne, but her spot in the show was quickly replaced by other captured orcas. SeaWorld went on to trademark the name Shamu to use for other performing killer whales, many of which endured a similar tragic life. Since Anne's near-death experience, there have been more than 30 incidents involving captive orcas, which have resulted in human injury or death.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Initial Quality Study Award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
In most cases, these attacks include pushing up against humans, dragging them down to the bottom of the pool, or striking them with their bodies. Several humans have been bitten during attacks, especially when the whales attempt to drag them using their teeth. Usually, those involved in fatal attacks have been staff at these animal parks rather than the public. Many groups believe that captive orcas become stressed due to being unnaturally cooped up, which makes them very aggressive. Ken Peters was a trainer who had a close call with an orca at SeaWorld. Kasatka, a 30-year-old orca, was said to have been agitated by hearing her calf call out when she yanked Ken Peters and pulled him underwater at the attraction in San Diego, California. Cameras at the park show Peters giving Kasatka a kiss from the side of the pool, and if everything had gone to plan, he was to then have dived down before being triumphantly lifted out of the water on the whale's nose. But when his head broke the surface, it was clear that something had gone terribly wrong. As he tried to stand, as the crowd clapped, he started to flail wildly because Kasatka had bitten his foot. The audience members, who were very shocked, could only look on in horror as the killer whale suddenly dove deep into the pool, pulling Peters with her and leaving him fighting for air, almost drowning. The trainer was held underwater twice by the 5,000-pound whale as it grabbed his foot and dove down for less than a minute each time. She eventually let him go, but he suffered a broken foot and puncture wounds. And that's like a
got lucky.
That's like a very common type of attack.
Yeah, it's just being played with, you know, in just this morbid way.
Yeah, kind of. Another incident occurred when trainer Chris Christensen put his head between the jaws of another young male orca named Hugo. Trainers used to do this as a trick. They would put their heads literally in the orca's mouth and be like, oh, like the crowd would be like, oh my God, like look at its teeth and look at its little head, like... Look at the little man's
look
head.
Look at how big it is.
Exactly. That could eat his head right off. And they're like,
really train these well.
Literally. But in this instance, Christensen needed 7 stitches to his cheeks after putting his head in Hugo's mouth. Hugo was supposed to keep his mouth open, of course, but instead he clamped his jaws shut on a miscue. And that wasn't the only Hugo incident. Plenty of other trainers were left with permanent scars after working with this orca. Hugo's behavior had become so erratic that administrative director Anthony G. Torin was forced to admit that working with Hugo had become too risky. I wonder how many incidents with Hugo had to happen before they were like, yeah, we're going to stop working with him.
Yeah.
You know, because that's their moneymaker. It's SeaWorld.
Yeah, well, they probably had a couple lawsuits.
Yeah, no, probably. But it's really tragic because Hugo died of a brain aneurysm after repeatedly ramming his head against the wall of his tank, apparently in an attempt to kill himself. Isn't that dark?
Wow.
Like, these animals are so smart, and they're, like, literally trying to kill themselves. They're so depressed.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's so messed up. Orky 2 is another male.
Orky 2?
Killer whale. Yeah, he's a killer whale who was born in 1968, captured at the age of 6 in British Columbia, Canada, and brought to SeaWorld in San Diego. In the 70s, he was involved in two high-profile incidents at the park where he tried to drown his trainers. He held one of the trainers at the bottom until the man almost lost consciousness. And the second instance was in 1978, trainer Jill Stratton, who was 27, nearly drowned when Orky 2 suddenly pinned her to the bottom of the tank. He held her underwater for a terrifying 4 minutes before she was rescued. 9 years later, another incident occurred when a trainer rode the orca's back during a performance and suffered a number of fractured vertebrae, fractured femur, and fractured pelvis when the whale breached the water and, like, jerked him around. And one of the most prominent cases was that of a 40-year-old veteran animal trainer, Don Brancho, who dreamed of working at SeaWorld. But on February 24th, 2010, she was tragically killed by an orca in front of horrified tourists after being dragged to the depths of the tank and literally torn apart.
Oh my God.
Yeah. SeaWorld said that Tillicum, a 26-year-old orca, pulled Dawn into his tank. Witnesses described how the animal suddenly grabbed her by the upper arm, tossed her around in his mouth, and pulled her beneath the water. Among the horrifying injuries she suffered was a fractured neck, a broken jaw, and dislocated elbow and knee.
Wait, you said she died?
She died, yeah.
Okay, oh my God.
Yeah, so in the wake of her death, Anne, who we talked about first, paid tribute to Dawn, knowing all too well that she could have met the same fate. In response to Dawn's passing, SeaWorld announced they would be ending their breeding program following years of campaigners rallying against them. SeaWorld has long battled claims about the conditions its captive killer whales are kept in, including allegations they suffer such acute stress they become ill, aggressive, and die early. The parks have long come under scrutiny, with campaigners arguing that the 36-foot pools the whales are kept in are inhumane. SeaWorld trainer Jeffrey Venture claimed that some whales were so psychologically traumatized that they would mutilate themselves and other orcas. They would grind their teeth or chew concrete out of boredom, causing dental damage and raking. Scratching each other with their teeth was a common occurrence. It's dark. So that's a rabbit hole that I unfortunately fell down today. I was really going to talk about just Anne, and then I was like, oh, okay, so many other cases of people getting hurt at SeaWorld, and then it got dark, so sorry about that. But that's just messed up.
Yeah, not cool.
You said it.
What else to say?
No, you're right. It is.
Because, like, I knew SeaWorld was not great, but right. I didn't really know the full story of why. I didn't know that they were smart enough to display this type of behavior. Like, they're literally dislocating their jaws.
Mm-hmm. They're chewing on concrete and, like, ramming their heads into the side of the thing so much that they die.
I mean, that's one that is even darker than just committing suicide. It's just the physical pain.
Yeah.
And repeated attempts. Like, it wasn't quick.
No. Yeah.
God.
It's gnarly. Really dark. They are incredibly smart. I don't know specifics on, like, how to illustrate how smart they actually are, but
yeah, it's like them and dolphins, right?
Yes, but I think orcas are smarter than dolphins.
Gotcha.
Yeah, anyway, we can move on to story number 3. It's another shark attack, and I want to give a warning at the top. It is kind of gory and tragic. So
buckle up. But I mean, what else were you expecting? It's a shark attack.
Yeah. So on the morning of August 19th, 1967, Lee Warner and Robert Murray Bartle arrived at the small coastal town of Jurien Bay in Western Australia for a spearfishing competition that would be happening in the following month. It was a beautiful day to be out on the water. It was a sunny day. The water was a bit choppy, but nothing that affected the visibility that much. And the two men wasted no time grabbing their fins, their spear guns, and their floats, and they began swimming out to where they would be hunting. At about 11 a.m., they were 700 or 800 meters offshore when they looked down and saw exactly what they had been looking for. There was a small underwater cave below them. Inside this underwater cave should have been these Goliath grouper fish, which was what they were hunting for. So the two men readied their spears and swam down about 25 feet to the bottom to explore this cave. Not long after getting down there, it became pretty apparent that there weren't any grouper, which was when they decided to resurface. But when they did that, Robert's float line had become tangled in the rocks on the ocean floor. And these float lines were basically a line that's attached to this float, and usually when you spear a fish, you attach it to this line and then you tow it along with you, is how it was described to me. But
so people know where you are?
I guess, yeah. And also you can, you know, spear fish and then take them with you, kind of thing.
Okay.
But Robert's line had gotten tangled, so he swam all the way back down to the bottom to fix it. After getting it untangled, he started to swim back up the 25 feet to resurface. Meanwhile, Lee, who was already at the surface, was looking out at the open ocean away from the shore when he sees and feels something huge swim very fast right underneath him.
Oh, so he just felt the water disturbance?
Yes.
Oh.
And he saw like a dark, like whoosh, bro, go right underneath him.
No, no, no.
Maybe a meter underneath him. He
okay,
wasn't.
You're in metric now. Proud
so
of you.
3 feet? About?
About.
He wasn't sure in that moment what it was. He thought maybe it was a sea lion or something like that. But when he looked below him, he saw that it was not a sea lion. But instead, he saw the back of a massive great white shark that was charging full speed with its mouth open at Robert. Robert, who was still about 10 feet from the surface, must have also seen this shark, considering it was charging right at him. But at that point, it didn't matter if he saw it or not, because there was nothing he could do. When great white sharks are in attack mode like that and are swimming full speed at something, they're moving somewhere around 35 miles per hour.
That is so fast.
Yeah. So that's where I got that number from earlier. I guess it's great whites. I don't know how fast bull sharks go, but still.
So fast I go down our street.
Yeah, just about. So it was only seconds before that shark was on Robert. The great white slams into Robert and clamps down on him so that its upper jaw is right below his shoulder going across his chest and his lower jaw was right above his hip going across his stomach. So basically his whole torso was in this shark's mouth.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And Lee, who was watching in horror, without even thinking, started swimming down toward Robert and the shark with his spear gun and took a shot, and he landed the spear right in the top of this shark's head. Terrifyingly, this really did nothing to deter the shark, and instead it turned around and looked directly up at Lee and began swimming up at him, still with Robert in its mouth. And then Lee had to watch in horror as Robert was literally bitten in half by this shark. As the shark was looking at Lee, he bit down on Robert and shook his head, tearing Robert in two.
Oh my God.
Robert's upper half, his head and his arms, went floating to the surface, while his legs and fins were still dangling out of the shark's mouth as it circled Lee. And the shark still had the spear in its head, and the water was full of blood. It couldn't get any more terrifying. Lee was now under the water trying to keep an eye on this shark to know where it was. He had an empty spear gun, and he was desperately trying to jab it in the eye to make it go away, but it was doing absolutely nothing. There was also this small bronze whaler zooming around, which is another shark, but Lee said, "I didn't worry about the whaler. It was too small to be compared to this other huge shark." So there's two sharks circling him. But as Lee looked around, he saw Robert's still loaded spear gun floating in the water not far from him, and he was able to grab it. He took another shot at the shark, but this time he missed the shark completely. somehow the line that got deployed from the spear got tangled around this great white, and the spear that was still stuck in its head had a line attached to it as well, and they had the float lines as well. So this shark that was circling had gotten tangled in these four different lines. So Lee, who knew Robert was already gone, decided his only chance to live was if he swam out of the water. But they were quite a ways from shore. So Lee started swimming as hard and as fast as he could, stopping every 20 meters or so to look back and see if this shark was chasing him. If it was, he would have been able to see the two floats that were now attached to the shark since it had gotten tangled in the lines. So that was a pretty good indicator of where the shark was. But by some stroke of luck, the shark never reapproached Lee, and it stayed in the area where the attack happened. Lee said, when I got to the shore, there was a narrow bit of beach and a little cliff face about 6 feet tall. I never took my flippers off. I got up on the top of the cliff with my flippers on, and he found a set of car keys, apparently, and drove to Greenhead for help and was brought back to the scene in a fishing boat. The shark was still in the area, tangled in the lines, and they tried to spear it again, but the shark managed to shake itself free and swim away, still with the spear in its head. Isn't that just a nightmare?
They just don't stop. Yeah. You know, what are you going to do? Two spears?
So it got the one spear in the head that Lee shot at it initially, and the spear just stayed in its head, but they didn't hit it another time.
Oh.
It just got tangled in the lines.
Thought you said they came back and popped it again.
They tried to, but they missed, and then the shark got untangled and swam away.
I can't believe it. It was number one, unfazed.
Yeah, with a spear in its head? That's something out of a horror movie. How does that even make sense? Doesn't it have a brain?
Right.
I guess it missed the brain.
It must not have gone deep enough.
Right.
I thought that they didn't have any bone. It's just cartilage. Must be pretty tough.
Well, yeah.
You know?
A great white?
Oh, my God. How tragic. I mean, I know. This is, you know, another level. You watch it happen.
I can't even imagine, the trauma. I truly cannot imagine. There was a memorial erected a year later for Robert. He was only 23 years old.
23, fuck.
I know. The tragedy would have been more than enough to keep most people out of the water forever. But for Lee, who was a man of the sea, said he was a pig-headed type, and he went back to spearfishing and worked for many years as a diver on resource projects, including about 8 years in Asia. And in 1982, he took up an abalone license. So he was hunting mollusks, I guess. And that wasn't even his last encounter with sharks. I guess if you're a professional diver, it's not going to be. But in 1985, while he was diving, another massive shark began circling him, and it would swim just feet away from him and then swim off about 60 to 70 feet away before turning around and coming back. And it did this about 4 or 5 times before it finally left. And in that instance, he didn't even get out of the water. Even though he was scared out of his mind, he continued diving because he said, quote, it was what I did for a living.
Okay, that's interesting. But can't you do something else? You know?
No, I guess not.
I'm just jealous of him because...
To not have any fear?
No.
Or to not be, like, dictated by your fear?
Well, I guess that, but also he knows exactly what he wants to do.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, he's found his, like, calling, whatever you want to call it. The thing he wants to do, he's found it.
Yes.
If this isn't going to stop him, you have to love doing it.
You have to literally be the one eaten by the shark to stop. Like, that's crazy.
You know, I don't love golf that much.
Right.
I mean, if I watched one of my teammates get eaten by an alligator tomorrow on the course, might be a wrap.
Yeah, that's...
For gator courses.
And that's totally fair.
Yeah.
That wasn't even his last run-in with a great white with Robert. He had one come so close to him in 1995 and, like, circling him that he had to jab it in the eye. And thankfully, it did swim away really fast after that. But he literally had to, like, jab a shark in the eye, a great white. And then he took up shark fishing.
Well, I guess you got to get back at him.
Right, yeah.
At some point.
Get the revenge. But that's where his story ends. It's just, like, it's really tragic. I cannot believe Robert was 23 years old. I can't believe that happened, period. But, like, he was 23. It's so sad.
Yeah.
How do we get out of this one? I don't
know.
I don't know. I guess let's move on to story number 4, which is our final story. And it's about a giant squid. Or really, let me correct myself, many giant squid.
No. I mean, one's enough. I was going to say this is the one I know the least about.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard talk about the beak that they have.
Oh, they got a beak.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
Yeah.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst, so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. initial quality study award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
This is one of those things where, like, you've heard stories of sailors and whatever out in the middle of the ocean, and they get attacked by the giant squid and it pulls down their ship and whatever. And you really want to think it's fake, but they're out there.
Yeah.
The Kraken is real, guys.
This is it. Have you ever watched, I forget what it was called, but it was on Animal Planet. Yeah, but I got hooked on that show. I was lit. They're like, number 10.
I definitely watched that. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Did they have like a whole intro?
Yeah, of course.
And then they were like, freaking lemurs.
Lemurs?
I don't know.
Your deadliest animals, lemurs?
Deadliest lemurs prowl the Sahara.
And right. Like, no, yeah.
You know. So I'm pretty sure that I've seen squid make the top list. Actually, I don't think it was deadliest. It was always top 10 blank.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever, insert. Sure. Yeah.
Well, it makes sense that the squid would be on that list because they're terrifying. So giant squid or Humboldt squid are also known as the Red Devil. Very fun. So in August of 1990, on a warm summer evening, photographer Bob Cranston and his diving partner were getting ready to explore the Sea of Cortez, hoping to discover more information about Humboldt squid feeding behaviors. So they were like actively out there trying to mess with some squid.
Cool.
They were joined by marine biologist Alex Kerstich, who was acting as their consultant, and he knew a lot about the Sea of Cortez and shared their passion for these massive squids. And he just generally loved the ocean. After getting out there, Bob and the others could see that the squid were out and very active. There were these fishermen who were pulling in these big Humboldt squids into their boat, like one after the other. And when they looked over the edge, they could see these 3 to 4 foot big squids all around and under the boat. So the thing about these giant squids is that most of them, I believe, are around 4 feet long. But some of them can get very big. But most of them are around 4 feet, and that's what they were working with, was 3 to 4 foot squids. Still too big for my liking, but...
Do they have the suction cup thingies?
Of course they do. Okay. And their suction cup thingies are, like, sharp.
Oh, word. Okay, I didn't know if it was just octopus and they,
no.
I don't know.
No.
Just had little, whatever...
Tentacles? They got tentacles with the little suction cups. Anyway, so this group was very excited about all these squid in the water because they had never seen anything like it, and it seemed like the perfect adventure. The three men suited up on the back of the boat before jumping into this dark water because also, it's nighttime. Just keep that in mind.
Guys.
Right. Humboldts were everywhere. They were hoping to get some really incredible video of the squids all around them. Their massive eyes, the squid eyes, can see in total darkness. And they were out there in this dark water, so they can only see so many squids with their, like, flashlights and cameras, but all of the squid could see them.
Yeah, also, do you blind the squid if you just point a headlamp at it?
If
its eye's huge, it's used to darkness.
Probably gets stunned a little bit, but it's not blind.
You're like, God, dude, it's...
Hey, man, not it's cool.
It's midnight, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to see here.
Yeah, there were hundreds of squid surrounding them.
Hundreds?
Yes.
Do they run in packs? Is this a thing?
Oh, they run in packs.
They run in packs?
Yeah, these squid... Okay, so I have this later on in my notes, so if I have to change the number, forgive me, but I believe they travel in packs usually of like thousands.
Thousands. Yeah.
Doesn't that make you want to die? It makes me want to die.
Yeah, it makes me never want to see... So it's like an ant. You say one, there's 2,000.
Maybe.
Fuck no, baby.
Right? Yeah. Their filming was a success, but as they returned to the boat, Bob realized that they were missing a member of the team.
There's three of you.
Right. So only two of them resurfaced. Alex, their marine biologist consultant, had been diving with them all night, but had not resurfaced with them. And he finally did, thankfully, resurface, but he was scrambling to get into the boat when he did resurface. It was clear that something was very wrong. He was very emotional, very shaken up, and bleeding, I believe. So Alex was alone in the water, and a very curious squid began nibbling on his fin. And instead of wiggling off this squid, he watched the squid, fascinated with it nibbling at his fin. But it was only moments later that five or six more squid completely bombarded him, because I guess they saw this one squid like eating at his foot and they were like, oh, food. And they all swarmed him. And their strong tentacles wrapped around his head and his body as they pulled him into the deep. I wish you could see my face right now. My eyes could not be wider. I'm just
popped
like
out of your head like a pug.
Like, I want to die. So all of them fought with each other to gain control of Alex. So while they did that, they pulled him further down into the ocean. And these squids are very big and strong animals, and they're really good at pulling and like moving very fast. They are propelled by water ejected through a hypanome. I hope I'm saying that right. A siphon. And their two triangular fins and their two tentacles bear about 100 to 200 suckers, each lined with razor sharp teeth. So, you know, those like suction cups you were just talking about, like octopus have? Yeah, they got razor sharp teeth, 200 of them, with which they grasp their prey and drag it toward a large sharp beak. So they use these razor sharp teeth tentacles to pull their prey into their beak mouth, and they eat them with their beak. Right.
Dude, I mean, the ocean is so...
It's messed up.
So scary.
Messed up. That's why I stick to the pool.
Stay in the pool.
I stay in the pool. I vibe with the pool.
No, I get it.
So after sucking fluid into their mantle cavity, their bodies contract, forcing fluid through a narrow siphon, which basically like makes them move really fast. And when they're headed straight down, they can generate a considerable force. And like I said, move very quickly. We get the point. So Humboldt squid are carnivorous marine invertebrates that move in shoals, is what it's called, of up to 1,200 individuals. So it's not multiple thousands. It's just, you know, 1,200 of them at any given moment.
Let me, after 50, does it really matter?
Yes. You know? Over 1,000?
Well, I'm just saying, how much more terrifying does it get after 200?
I feel like if it was 50 of them, they could spread apart enough that you could see through them. But 1,200, even multiple hundred, you could not see through the squid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess that's my point, is after a certain number, like 1,200, you wouldn't even really...
Well, yeah. I get what you're saying. But... I can't even imagine it. They move up to speeds of 15 miles per hour. So not 34, but still. So Alex, if we go back to him, was being pulled very far below the surface and was pulled about 135 to 140 feet below the surface. The other guy was pulled 12 to 15 feet, and this guy's pulled 140 feet below the surface. So he realized how much trouble he was really in when he got 6 to 8 squids on him. One of the squids tore a gold chain from his neck, and what? He was certain he was about to die. So I guess they just...
Is this like a mafia shakedown?
No, literally. I was like, they're mugging him. Like, yeah. They're like, give me the chain, bro. Like,
take the chain.
So that was when he began fighting back, and he frantically began kicking and punching and shook them off as best as he could. And thankfully it worked, and the squid released him. But it wasn't without injury. His body was covered in lacerations from the thousands of tooth-like grasping hooks on the squid's tentacles. His neck and shoulders were all ripped up. Let me just give you a quick description of what squids do. I know I kind of talked about it a little bit.
Oh boy.
So the squid uses its barbed tentacle suckers to grab its prey and slices and tears the victim's flesh with its beak and radula. They often approach prey quickly with all 10 appendages extended forward in a cone-like shape, Upon reaching striking distance, they open their 8 swimming and grasping arms and extend 2 long tentacles covered in sharp hooks, grabbing their prey and pulling it back toward a parrot-like beak, which can easily cause serious lacerations to human flesh. These 2 longer tentacles can reach full length, grab prey, and retract so fast that almost the entire event happens in 1 frame of a normal speed video camera.
Wow.
Each of the squid suckers is ringed, like I said, with sharp teeth, and the beak can tear flesh, although they are believed to lack the jaw strength to carry heavy bone. So they could just tear you up, but they can't carry your bones. Don't worry. They won't take bones with you.
I mean, you'll be a skeleton.
They're also cannibals.
They're cannibals.
They eat each other. Yeah.
Wait, what? So they run in packs of 1,200 and sometimes eat each other?
Oh, yeah.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Do they war with each other?
I mean, maybe they That's got...
That's big
yeah.
enough to... Maybe they have squid gangs.
Literally, a squid word?
Squid word. I thought you said squid games.
Squiddy. They have squid wars.
They must. I mean, could you imagine how epic that would be to witness 1,200 v 1,200 squid war?
That sounds like Squidward. Squid
war. War?
Hi, Squidward. Yeah, no, that's what it sounds like. I don't know.
Well, this is probably something like nobody's actually spent the time watching them because they try to kill you.
Right. Yeah. Well, so okay, we don't so know. The thing about squid is that you can fight back and then they kind of just leave you alone. Like they don't want their prey to fight them. So
really,
when I was watching a video about these squids, they were like, if you fight back hard enough, they should swim away. Like they're terrifying and they will hurt you. But typically you can not die.
Well, that's somewhat comforting.
Yeah. But the guys who said that they like regularly dive with these squids and like they know how they function and everything. And they're like, yeah, no, it's terrifying. Like this is never not scary.
Yet they keep going back. This doesn't make sense to me, but I'm glad that they are not like the bull sharks.
Yeah.
You know, that would be, in my opinion, more terrifying.
Well, yeah.
Because for some reason, to me, I've seen enough sharks. Mm-hmm. I kind of know what they are.
Right.
The squid feels like an alien to me.
It does.
The tentacles, they can push water through their
beak
muscles.
I don't know.
And then they just they approach you as a cone.
Yep.
And then at the end,
and
they
then
just
they
open up.
Like an umbrella.
And then they can,
with their razor sharp teeth.
They take the 2 grabbers
and they beak you.
And it goes in 1 frame of a camera.
That's really fast.
And then it's just straight to 1 beak.
Here's the other thing about when I said in the beginning that the Kraken is real. So I was watching video of this like fishing crew. I don't know. They were on a yacht. I don't have many specific details about them, but they were in the middle of the ocean on this massive yacht. And out of nowhere, it felt like they had hit land. And they were like, what the hell? Like we're in the middle of the ocean and there's no sandbar. So what gives? They look over the side and there is a gigantic squid basically wrapped around their yacht, and they started panicking because they're like, this is going to sink our yacht. Like they had met the Kraken, basically.
Whoa.
And they somehow managed to get this squid off of their yacht. I don't know if the squid just got bored and like stopped attacking the yacht and swam away, but like they lived and their yacht didn't sink, but they saw the Kraken. Their boat got like held up by the Kraken, and they went like below the deck, you know, and like looked out their like little porthole windows and saw, like, they were like, you could not even imagine how big this thing was. Like we couldn't have even seen how big it was. We only saw its like big tentacle arms because the bottom, like the whole rest of the squid was not even visible to us.
So it almost took a whole boat down. I'm just
thinking,
that's
the Kraken.
What does it eat?
It's other,
you know,
squid brethren and people and
probably
fish and yeah,
literally anything,
literally
and everything.
Yeah.
That's big enough to be able to eat a shark. If you can
if
you can eat a boat, you can eat a shark.
Oh my god, Kraken v Megalodon.
Yeah.
Come
on. No, God, we're now doing like,
come on,
animal wars.
Who
that
wins?
Would be sick.
Kraken v Megalodon.
I think the Kraken. I think the shark moves faster.
Yeah.
but
I don't know. Squid might move faster, actually.
Well, you just said.
Oh, that you're right. Don't. You're right. I totally am wrong.
I'm thinking just death by a thousand cuts for the Megalodon.
Literally.
Because I don't think that it seems that the squid is agile enough that it would kind of move out of the way. Because the shark, it's just a straight line. I don't think it's very like.
Yeah, they don't move very fast. They kind of have to make a little arch. You know, if they want to turn around, they got to really want it.
Yeah, they got to work for it.
They do.
But yeah, I think that's my position.
You think Kraken? I'm thinking really hard about this. It's not very deep. I don't know. Maybe you're right. I think Megalodon.
It does seem bigger.
It does. In my brain, somehow, it seems bigger.
How is the yacht? I'm concerned about the yacht.
The yacht is fine. The squid let go.
That's
and
good.
They lived.
But so it was slowly sinking?
It wasn't slowly sinking, but they were like, it was wrapped around the yacht. So they're like, if we don't get this thing off the boat, it could sink the boat.
Yeah, then you're really toast.
Exactly. So they were fine. Nothing happened. But it was just like, oh my God, like this is the biggest squid I've ever seen, ever. Like true, true giant squid.
Cool.
Cool.
Cool. Cool,
cool, cool, cool. Cool, cool, cool. No, for sure.
Fun thoughts.
For sure. Actually, I'm going to stay in the pool.
Yeah.
You know what? Scratch that. I'm going to stay in the hot tub.
In the pool.
You know what? Bathtub.
Into the pool.
Small, small.
Actually, I'll stay in the lakes.
No.
Thank you.
No.
There's no sharks in the Great Lakes.
Oh, they said bull sharks could be in lakes too.
Not in the Great Lakes.
Well.
Stop it. Okay. Don't ruin the Great Lakes for me, for Christ.
I don't know. I'm scared now. Okay. So anyway, Alex lived, which we love to hear because we have an Alex of our own.
I mean, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Did Alex go back to keep researching?
I think he did. Yeah. I mean, he was a marine biologist.
God bless him.
Yeah, so they said the single worst thing you can do when you're attacked by a squid is to not fight for your life, which I can't imagine any person being attacked by something and not fighting for their life, unless you just like completely, you're like, you just accept, immediate acceptance. Don't do that. Fight back.
Yeah, no.
Fight back. So another thing about squids is they do this crazy thing where they flash like a strobe light.
What?
They literally flash like a strobe light. And it's like a sign to other squids around them to strike, apparently, or like it's for some reason. They don't really know why they do it, but like I saw a video of this squid and it was legitimately blinking as if it had like a light in it.
Does it make light?
Yes.
I don't bioluminescent?
Yeah, it's something like they literally are like a strobe light.
Again, like alien, they're a light bulb. They're an alien light bulb.
Yeah, exactly.
Monster.
Yeah. So despite the fact that they are literally all over the world, it's pretty unlikely that giant squids would ever pose a threat to humans because they live at extreme depths, which is why people are like, oh, the Kraken will never be a problem. But then they...
Yeah, you find one on the bottom
like,
of your yacht one day.
Sometimes they come up from the depths is what I'm learning, which I don't love. Oh, yeah, the yacht, the massive squid with the yacht happened in January of 2003. So I did mention it. But anyway, that's where our story comes to an end. And that's where our episode comes to an end. Any remaining thoughts that we haven't already spewed out? I feel like we've kind
of
just been...
a lot of terror.
Yeah, a lot of fear. Hey, if you're going to the beach, enjoy.
Enjoy. I mean, stay close to the shore.
Or, you know, just don't go in the water altogether like me.
I mean, go in the water.
Sit on the sand. Put your toes in. But, like, maybe you don't go in crazy long. Maybe, like, read a book or something under an umbrella like me.
Yeah, no, I feel like we're going to get stats like, oh, only blank people get killed by sharks. You're more likely to get struck by lightning.
Or like hit by a car. Yeah, of course. I know.
How many people are actually going to the beach, though?
I don't know.
I mean, we lived in LA for 3 years. Hmm. And how many times did we go to the beach?
Well, we're not beachheads, so.
I know, but I feel like we're average people.
A couple times
a
year.
My point is, most people don't live by the water.
It's true.
So they go
You'll
to
be
the
fine.
Beach 2 or 3 times a year. And the people that do live there don't even really go there that often.
That's true. Thank you, numbers, man. I'm really just messing with you. It's going to be
numbers,
fine. You go to the beach. You're going to have a good time. But this is what goes through my brain. And I just wanted to let you in on that. But anyway, what's your good thing?
What's your good thing?
You couldn't think of anything other than golf?
I put on the spot. I'm having a hard time.
That's fine. My good thing is that I'm painting my office.
That's true. We have samples on the wall. We've chosen. The chosen one is
Van Allen green, I believe. It's like a sage green. I think it's what it's called.
It's lovely.
Thank you. I'm excited. I'm gonna go pick up the paint this weekend and get a paint in.
Yeah, the other two are kind of this horrible mint.
Yeah, no, it's the two contenders other than the one I chose are pistachio and light pistachio. So they look a little bit crazy, but the other one looks nice.
Yeah, I mean, they just make me think of mint chocolate chip ice cream.
It is giving that vibe. It's definitely giving that vibe. Yeah, I don't know. Just I want to paint my office and make it a fun color. So that's what I'm doing. As you should. And what's your good thing?
For those that don't know, did we talk about my garden?
I think, yeah, we mentioned it.
Did we mention? I've planted potatoes, okay?
Uh-huh.
I also bought a tomato plant.
That's the new one is the tomato plant.
From Costco. So yeah. I have three pots of things.
We love your pots of things. Which is my garden. Yes.
More to come. But, oh, I also planted cherry tomatoes, but it's just dirt right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I just threw the seeds in.
Yep.
I'm actually skeptical that it will actually grow. Anyway, in any case, the potatoes have actually sprouted up.
Yeah.
And have...
So many sprouts.
Yeah. I have maybe 12 to 15 sprouts in each pot.
And you planted, like, what, 3 or 4 potatoes? It's crazy how many potatoes they sprout.
I know. I don't know. I'm excited about that. Slay. I don't really know what to expect or if I'm just going to get like little turnip sized potatoes.
Even still, we'll eat them.
It'll be cool. But yeah, I'm excited to become Farmer Hunt.
Slay. Farmer Hunt. All right. Yeah, well, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out the poll that's up currently for our next upcoming bonus episode, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to them and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to see pictures we post of all the stories we talk about, check us out on Instagram @nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the T on the end of podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.